from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. An Andy Warhol retrospective opening Sunday at SF MoMA may surprise fans who thought they knew the artist's work. The exhibit spans Warhol's 40-year career, from his well-known pop art to experimental work made after he survived getting shot in 1968. And at 10:30, we talk with the curators. But first, the deadliest and the most destructive fire in California history, the campfire in Butte County, was caused by faulty electrical transmission lines owned and operated by PG&E. We'll discuss the investigation into the fire that killed 85 people. That's all next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. California state investigators concluded Wednesday that PG&E's transmission lines caused last November's campfire, which claimed 85 lives, burned more than 150,000 acres, and leveled the Butte County town of Paradise. The wildfire was the deadliest and most destructive in California's history, and we're going to discuss the findings and their implications with KQED News reporter and editor Dan Brecky. And if you have questions or if you would like to weigh in here, we do welcome you to join the program. And our toll-free number, let me put it out now, is 866-733-6786. That, again, is 866-733-6786, and welcome, Dan Brecky.
You're welcome. You're welcome, and let's have a nice show.
Yeah, well, we always try to have a nice show and to be as civil as we can. It's always, of course, a delight to have you here with us. A lot of questions to ask, though, in the wake of this. And these transmission lines certainly caused a fire. PG&E was anticipating this, but this opens the way for all these lawsuits now. And also, is curious to me to I've got this PG&E response right in front of me to the campfire announcement, and what they're saying is they accept the determination, though they have not determined about the second fire that ignited from vegetation contact with the PG&E electrical distribution lines, which Cal Fire also determined.
Yeah, that's right. I think the person on the street who's been following this since last November 8th is not surprised by the finding that PG&E transmission lines and electrical lines were involved in starting this fire. That's been evident.
It's been evident to PG&E, in fact.
And PG&E has actually acknowledged it. It hasn't been a full-fledged admission or confession or anything like that. But for investors and for regulators, they have been acknowledging that this is the case. The second line that you mentioned, the situation is a little muddy. It's about a mile or so from the original start of the fire, and the circumstances involving that line are not altogether known. There's sort of confused scene, trees down, wires down, and the CAL FIRE determination there was that vegetation came into contact with the power lines and caused a secondary start there. In the larger scheme of things, it's not that consequential. That fire would have been just as destructive had that second point of origin not happened.
The really curious thing about, though, is that PG&E also says in their statement they have not reviewed it, but they accept it.
Well, they're privy to a lot of information that we're not privy to. They're working they've been cooperating, we hear, with the Butte County District Attorney in the criminal investigation that's going on up there into exactly what PG&E's role is and whether it rises to the point where some kind of crime was committed. Now, CAL FIRE's report did say that the CAL FIRE investigators found that there is probable cause to believe state laws were broken. We don't know what laws they were. Generally, in these cases, it's vegetation management. There are laws that regulate the distance between trees and other vegetation and power lines. But in this case, we know that the charges that may be considered could be up to reckless arson or even involuntary manslaughter.
So the DA has to consider whether to move forward, and there's also an investigation going on from the Attorney General.
The Attorney General is working side by side with the Butte County District Attorney. That came out last month in a bankruptcy court hearing. So we're told that both of these offices have devoted substantial resources to this investigation and, in fact, have sent evidence from the scene of the fire start, where this transmission tower near the town of – it's actually a little resort area called Polga along the Feather River – that they've sent equipment recovered from that scene to an FBI lab in Virginia for examination and analysis.
We, by the way, invited PG&E to join us in the segment with our own Dan Brecke, who is editor and reporter for KQED News. They declined, but they did send a statement. And let me read part of this, just a couple sentences here, Dan, and get your response. Our hearts go out to those who have lost so much, and we remain focused on supporting them through the recovery and rebuilding process. What does that mean?
You know, I think this is consistent with a long string of PG&E statements that they want to emphasize that they have a connection to the community up there. Many of PG&E's field workers up there lived in this area. And, you know, if you go back a few months, you know, the initial feeling about PG&E's role actually elicited or aroused some real hostility up there. So they, you know, maybe not unexpectedly, in the wake of a disaster like this, and disaster almost underplays it. Remember, you know, I have to think about this all the time. There are 85 people killed up there, and there are nearly 14,000 homes destroyed. And they're trying to emphasize their ties and that they care about safety. Now, you know, they've gotten a lot of pushback on that message. Judge William Alsup in the federal court, who's overseeing the company's probation and a conviction in a separate case, completely separate case, has really chastised PG&E for its lack of safety culture and its lack of attention to community's safety. And that's actually a message that was repeated yesterday in bankruptcy court when Governor Newsom and his office filed a motion that criticized PG&E for not really getting the message that they need to make safety first and foremost. This was made in the context of PG&E is seeking a little slack from the court so that it has a longer time to
It's a reorganization plan. Yeah.
Right, to file its reorganization plan. And Governor Newsom is saying, hey, they need to be kept on a short leash to keep their eye on the ball here.
He was really excoriating them, and he said they don't need 6 months. They should have it by August, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, let's also talk about the lawyer for the victims, Frank Petrie, who said they should stop spending tens of millions of dollars in bankruptcy court and compensate victims.
Well, the situation for the wildfire plaintiffs, and you know, that's code word for everybody who lost property, some people who lost family members, not only in this campfire, but in other fires that PG&E has been implicated in. So some of these date back to actually 2015 up in Calaveras and Amador counties in the Sierra foothills. And then the fires that we're most aware of, 2017, October, up in the North Bay and Mendocino County, Lake County. So the situation of the wildfire plaintiffs is everything is on hold while this case, while this bankruptcy case is in progress. Now, it may be that the CAL FIRE finding and the CAMP FIRE investigation will aid those wildfire victims' cases. It won't be a direct aid because that report cannot be used in civil court, but it does make it clear who was responsible for that. And that's an important finding in terms of liability.
And we're talking about liability that amounts to, what, about $10.5 billion?
Well, the numbers that have been thrown around, yeah, that's I think that's actually on the low end for that one fire. And PG&E has talked about a cumulative total of $30 billion or more for all these fires.
Well, let me give out the number here because I know there are many of you who would like to get more information about the state investigation, finding PG&E equipment caused the deadly campfire and what it means for victims, what it means really for ongoing concern about, well, movement toward the district attorney in Butte County and the district attorney of California, Javier, excuse me,
Javier Becerra.
Thank you. I went blank on Becerra for a moment there. I'm thinking, and I don't call him by his first name, so it's Javier Becerra. I mean, what's this all going to mean in terms of PG&E answering for what is culpability here? And let me give out the number. The toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. We do want to hear your questions and comments and thoughts on this, so please feel free to join us. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Isn't there a comprehensive community wildfire safety program that PG&E is talking about getting behind?
Well, all the utilities, all the electrical utilities in the state have been required under a bill passed by the legislature last year to file wildfire mitigation plans with the California Public Utilities Commission. And the three big investor-owned utilities, PG&E, Southern California Edison, and San Diego Gas and Electric, have all filed those. Those were originally filed in February, and they've been refined some since then. And the CPUC itself is supposed to give its sign-off to those later this month. So, yes, those plans involve everything from what the companies are calling situational awareness, creating weather networks and other means of detecting wildfires early, to what they call public safety power shutoffs, which would be preemptively cutting power to certain communities in periods of extremely high fire danger. That's something, by the way, that San Diego Gas and Electric started more than 10 years ago and apparently has been very successful in heading off catastrophic fires. PG&E and Southern California Edison did it last year for the first time and have promised expanded shutoffs this year if there's really dangerous conditions.
Well, we may have some blackouts too this summer.
Well, that's what could happen with these power shutoffs. So PG&E had a very limited program last year, and they changed that in response largely to the circumstances around the campfire. The transmission line that was involved there is a 115-kilovolt line called the Caribou-Palermo power line, and PG&E didn't turn it off, even though there were red flag fire conditions, and their weather stations in the area showed, you know, very gusty winds, extremely low humidity, and high temperatures. And so there were classic, very dangerous fire conditions, but PG&E didn't turn off the lines. Why? Its policy was not to turn off these major transmission lines because it requires more coordination and it affects a wider area. Now, this year, PG&E says all of its territory, 5.4 million customers, that would include right here in the Bay Area, could be affected by power shutoffs this year.
And again, Dan Brecke with us in studio and Frank with us on the phones. Frank, join us. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hey, Dan. How's the bike going?
Frank, good to hear your voice.
Yeah, well, I guess I'd like to take us back a little bit more like 10, 12 years because it's my understanding or my impression that I've been listening to this debate between the PUC and PG&E about spending money on shareholder dividends as opposed to power line clearance for almost as long as I've been living in California. And I'm wondering whether any part of your research in kind of getting ready for the segment gave you an understanding or a feel for how long that's been going on and how much, and you, whether you have an opinion as to how derelict the PUC's been in failing to, you know, pull these people up with a round turn.
Well, I don't really have any opinion on whether the CPUC has been derelict. I mean, listen, but the people who have been involved in this, and for instance, Judge Alsup is one. He's gone off on the CPUC and its performance in regulating safety here. But you're right that this debate about you know, how much the utilities are spending on safety issues goes way back. If you look at some of the lawsuits that have been filed, they cite cases, not just wildfires, but poorly maintained equipment for the natural gas system in PG&E's case, or power vaults like we have in downtown San Francisco. They cite cases going back to the 1980s. You know, these are private companies with a huge public role, and they need to deliver. Their feeling is they need to deliver profits to their shareholders. They would plead that they always have safety in mind. But as Judge Alsup said in his famous oratory from the bench, why does PG&E always say safety is its number one thing? I hear it all the time. Safety, safety, safety. It's just not true. And he's pointing to the fact that we've had these fires. So, you know, when we come down to the last few years, now we have a pretty long track record of the utility safety and now electrical system safety being raised to the fore as a major wildfire concern.
Let me thank you for the call, Frank. And apropos of that, here's Mojo who writes, I'd really like to know how PG&E continues to operate in the state when they are constantly putting profits in front of safety and have been since the 50s. So there's echoing somewhat what we've just touched on.
You know, the Utility Reform Network is an organization that we know well. It's been active for decades talking about safety concerns. And this is
remember
pretty much
Sylvia Siegel here.
Exactly. And their argument has been that PG&E's performance probably represent grounds to put it into court receivership, actually having a court appoint somebody to run the company to make sure that these issues are addressed.
Apropos of that, we'll go to Tim, who has something to say on that line. Tim, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I'm curious to know if there would be a court that would, or a lawyer that would ask a court to submit an injunction to prevent PG&E from cutting off power in the interest of public safety.
You know, it's possible. The CPUC and many local agencies like emergency responders, some towns, have raised concerns that shutting off power could have lots of unintended negative consequences. For instance, interrupting emergency communications if power was shut down. And so those – and there are lots of other issues too. For instance, with individuals, I mean there are many individuals who require a steady power source for medical equipment. The CPUC has addressed some of those things and in the past, and they've decided that the greater public interest in avoiding a catastrophe like a campfire would weigh more heavily than an individual interest. But – this is, as I was saying earlier, this is something the CPUC is going to decide on for this year, later this month, and it could wind up with somebody going to court. It would not be that surprising.
Talking again with KQED News editor and reporter Dan Brecke. And Dan, here's Gary who says the most confusing issue regarding PG&E's culpability is that corporations are now people, so why are the PG&E leadership not being held criminally liable? If you or I allow a campfire to escape and burn down even a single tree, we are held criminally responsible. Why not PG&E?
I was talking to Robert Weisberg, who's a Stanford law professor, last night, and he mentioned an old nostrum from the English courts of the 18th century. Corporations have no soul to damn. They have no body to kick. And so you can't send them to jail. And what happens in these cases, they could be criminally charged. And generally what happens in those cases, though, you can't send the company to prison. So you
can go after the leadership and those making decisions.
It would be very, very difficult to prove the case that an individual executive, for instance, had the required recklessness or malice required to prove a felony charge. So what happens instead, if you find the company guilty, you have a string of severe sanctions imposed, hopefully severe, as in the San Bruno case. And you know, that's a real possibility if this goes to court in Butte County and if there is a conviction.
And we'll go to another call. Dave, you're on with us. Welcome, Dave.
Yeah, I wanted to ask the 21st century architect question. Suppose some of this PG&E monies were spent on taking all residential, all private homes in the fire areas off the grid. Is there, what about the future? That should be where we go. no power lines. I don't know if that's at all realistic, if anyone's speaking about it, but that's, I'm curious.
Well, you know, private homeowners are starting to adopt battery systems that do allow them to stay off the grid in connection with some other source of power like solar panels. In the case of PG&E, which is a grid operator or, you know, owns the infrastructure and sends the electricity through the wires, you know, they are talking about creating resilience zones. And so what does that mean? So they would like to create a system where if you turned off the power in the grid in an area, you would actually have some functional power system within a limited area so that none of these vital services or even things like grocery stores and gas stations would get shut down. So people would still have power even if they were just an island in a larger area. So people are talking about that. I would say it's pretty far from being generally adopted, though.
Also talking a lot about building lines under the ground. But that seems to be going nowhere because they say it's too cost prohibitive. But look at all the cost of these fires. I mean, I always bring that equation into bear.
That's often brought up, and it's a solution for limited areas. When you look at the costs that are estimated for even a limited, it comes up in urban
areas. They're outrageous, yeah.
Yeah, they're high.
Here's another caller, Dave. Another Dave. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, hi. You know, I was really wondering, you know, you're blaming PG&E a lot, and I understand they're at fault, but, I mean, don't these homeowners and the local governments be aware that these trees are near the lines and they need maintenance to be cut back, you know? I mean, I always wonder about that factor, you know?
Well, under state law, it's the utility's responsibility. There are some things that private homeowners or property owners could do to help PG&E and the other utilities. For instance, PG&E runs up against situations where property owners will deny access to a piece of property for an inspection. So there has been talk, at least in court, about maybe crafting some state law that would require access. And then, of course, you know, we talk about defensible space. That really isn't about the power lines per se, but that's something that that's a message we've heard from CAL FIRE and other agencies for a long time. And it's not clear that it's uniformly obeyed or paid attention to.
Listener named Jill writes, I called PG&E the day before Easter to advise them of heavy equipment on a pole with broken supports and that was able to fall on the sidewalk and street. Someone came out for the first time 2 weeks ago to address my safety concern. They still haven't fixed it. She's trying to show that in terms of their putting safety first as an example of that. But you hear a lot of those stories, I know.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there. Dan, good to have you with us. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dan Brecke, editor and reporter for KQED News, who has really, to put it mildly, been on top of this story all along. And we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about the Andy Warhol exhibit that's at the SF MoMA. Stay tuned for that. We've got two world-class curators who will be joining us, and we'll talk about Andy Warhol. I'm Michael Krasny. We'll be right back.